Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 8th of June 2015, the podcast that keeps on the grass. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week are Dave Turcotte and Travis Retriever. Guys, welcome back to the podcast.
Sup?
It's good to be back, Shane.
Let's eviscerate the news of the bogus. And the big news now is the Ross Ulbricht kangaroo court we've been following. He was found guilty of all 7 charges, and the judge has gone full Kafka and given him a sentence of life in prison.
Jesus.
Now, see, it'd be entertaining if he went full Kafka, but... Oh, wait, who am I kidding? Who the hell's here has played Final Fantasy VI?
I have, actually.
Yeah, this is a sentence that's even beyond what the prosecution requested. And, I mean, if you read a lot of her comments... on this, they're just horrible. Like, for example, quote, "The stated purpose of the Silk Road was to be beyond the law. In the world you created over time, democracy didn't exist. You were captain of the ship, the Dread Pirate Roberts."
Projection at its finest. Sweetheart, you're the one being the dictator here and sentencing effectively an innocent man to life.
Yeah, but she wears a black robe, so she's getting rid of the competition.
Natch.
I think I see Batman.
Yeah, don't steal, the government hates competition.
And in addition to the life sentence, Ulbricht was ordered to pay a restitution of more than $183 million. Some of that is going to be able to come from the bitcoins that they seized, and they'll apply that to the debt.
So it's not good enough that they're locking him in there for life. They got to take all his money, too.
Because they're the government, and he's not.
Basically, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What he had said to the judge was, quote, "I wanted to empower people to make choices in their lives, to have privacy and anonymity. I'm not a sociopathic person trying to express some inner badness." And the judge was hearing none of that. Now, this life sentence came after, like I said, he was convicted on 7 charges. The prosecution just went ahead and dropped 2 of them, but he got the life sentence anyway. And, of course, Ulbricht's defense is saying that he's going to appeal. But, I mean, there was just so much about this that was like, this was in no way a fair trial. I mean, you even have evidence of corrupt Secret Service and DEA agents going in there stealing millions of dollars in Bitcoin and things like that.
But you see, Bitcoin is terrible, so give it to us! Not... Come on!
Well, it wasn't even that, it was just that the federal government said, well, this is an ongoing investigation, so we can't release this to the public, so the defense wasn't allowed to examine that and try and bring it up and do anything with it.
Yeah.
No, you know what this was? This was a classic case where they were trying to make an example out of this guy.
That's exactly what the judge said.
Yep. And the fact that they openly admit it, it says a lot, really, about not only the corrupt court system, the war on drugs, and a lot of other things. And this whole case really speaks on so many issues, both in terms of the law and in terms of the mentality of people when it comes to things like this.
What absolutely kills me is how people can be, like, just completely, pretty much total voluntarious and anarchist in their everyday life, and understand those principles and stuff when applied that way. Yet, as soon as you get to stuff like this with government, oh, well, you know, it's a social contract, or, oh, well, that wasn't... Well, this is appropriate here because reasons. It's like, oh my god! And here I'm struggling to learn these social skills and stuff, and it's like, it just basically makes me want to scream.
The mentality has to change. It really does. I mean, we've come a long way when it comes to things like pot legalization. A lot of people are behind that now. But when it comes to the simple idea of being able to voluntarily trade among one another, no, we still have a long way to go. People were celebrating that this man got life in prison, something that murderers get far less.
Yeah, murderers get out in 15.
Jesus.
And people were saying, oh, well, he was a cartel king and a, you know, drug lord and all this. No, he wasn't. He ran a website. That's all he did. He ran a website, and people were able to freely trade among one another.
Well, and at the hearing, they did things like they brought in this father who said, quote, "I strongly believe my son would still be alive today if Mr. Ulbricht had never created Silk Road because the son had died of a heroin overdose," and asked the judge to pass, quote, "the most severe sentence the law will allow." Now, I feel for this father. He's lost a child. And I wouldn't expect anyone to be thinking straight or to be rational in that situation. But there is no way you can say that the son would be alive without Silk Road. If he hadn't gotten heroin from Silk Road, he could have just gone, you know, down a couple streets probably and bought it at the right street corner.
Not probably. If he lived in the right area, he definitely could.
And considering the actual drug cartel's track record, I imagine he would have been far more likely to die.
Yeah, and that was what the defense said, that they were actually reducing harm in the drug trade by making sure you didn't have to deal with street thugs, you didn't have to deal with anyone who was in a position to do you any physical harm, and you had all of the reviews and the ratings and the reputation system to say, okay, these are the people who are selling the safe drugs. They're not mixing them with anything crappy or whatever. But the judge had none of that because she said that the Silk Road expanded access to drugs. Quote, Silk Road was about fulfilling demand, and it was about creating demand. It was market expanding. Now understand, this was not a website a child could have just stumbled on. You actually had to go out of your way to get there. You had to get the Tor browser and get on that encrypted network, and then you had to type in all that long cryptic nonsense that is .onion addresses. I mean, you had to do it on purpose.
Not only that, but let's be perfectly honest. Normal people did not know what the Silk Road was before this big thing happened.
No kidding.
I never even heard of it until the guy got arrested. And chances are, who else heard of it before then other than people who were intentionally going out of their way to go there?
Or people like Shane who are more tech-savvy, but, you know.
Yeah, because we actually did a story on it before then and how it was actually creating a safe marketplace, and we talked about all the stuff it was able to do.
I think I was actually one of the people on the podcast that day, now that I think about it. I might have been.
Well, even still, I think most people can say they never heard of the Silk Road before, at least, maybe not before the guy was arrested, but at least before they started really investigating it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah, that's when it really started getting out there. But listen to what the judge said, quote, the idea that it's harm-reducing is so very narrow. It's about a privileged group sitting in their own homes with their high-speed internet connections. Yes, she played the privilege card.
Fuck you.
Fuck you, right in the neck.
Like, you gotta be this rich brat to have broadband internet nowadays.
Oh, coincidentally, I think that it is a bit of a stretch, if only for me, but then that has more to do with the fact that good internet service tends to be restricted or monopolized, but last I checked, I don't recall her or anyone else in government going off against that, because that would hurt their corporate buddies.
Now, of course, there's also the accusations that Ulbricht had paid to have six people murdered, and he was not charged with that, and the prosecution presented precisely zero evidence of it in the trial, so there was nothing for the defense. You know, the defense wasn't even allowed to come up and say, no, he didn't do that. But the judge allowed the prosecution to tell the jury about that because she actually said that it wasn't prejudicial.
What?
Yeah, okay. That was bad enough. We covered that before. That was bad enough. But now, listen to one of her reasons for giving him the life sentence. Quote, I find there is ample and unambiguous evidence that he commissioned five murders to protect his commercial enterprise. Okay, the legal definition of prejudicial means that it will affect the jury's verdict and the judge's sentence. She said it wasn't prejudicial, and then here she is coming right out and saying that she's using this as a criteria for her life sentence.
You fucking bitch! You lying sack of shit!
I don't see how. I mean, this is just an appeal waiting to happen. There's just no way. There's no way he got a.
If we were in any sane society, that would have been recorded, and they would have immediately thrown that out. Immediately. But we don't.
If this were a sane society, he would never have been having to operate outside of the law or anything like that to begin with. This could all be out in the open.
True, but the fact remains that this is a blatant con job, and this is just a case of a judge with an agenda.
The bit that made me face palm as well was when she talked about, oh, he was a drug cartel lord. Oh, no, he wasn't. If he was, he would have been getting funding from the government. If one of the other stories we've covered is any indicator, you whore and bitch.
But it just kills me. I mean, they outright state, this will not be part of what the jury has to decide you're guilty of. And then they say, oh, well, I'm deciding that's the reason why I'm giving you a life sentence. Regardless of the fact that the jury had nothing to do with that particular argument. It's insane. It's baffling. And it's, honestly, I would even go as far as to say it's criminal.
Yeah, I mean, and she comes right out and says this, quote, Silk Road's birth and presence asserted that its creator was better than the laws of this country. This is deeply troubling, terribly misguided, and very dangerous.
Fake indignation alert. Fake indignation alert.
Well, that's funny because you feel you're better than the presidents you set in your own courtroom.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean like the big one? The Constitution, which you swore an oath to and is supposed to be the supreme law of the land? Oh, but, you know, that's just a piece of paper, right?
Exactly.
Constitution aside, they openly stated that this would not be part of what the jury has to convict him on, and yet this judge thinks she's better than the precedent that was already set with that simple thing alone. So you want to talk about being better than the law or above the law? How about not thinking you're better than your own goddamn consistency?
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing about this is it's clearly, from her comments, she's punishing a political dissident and doing it to set an example so all of the hundreds of other darknet marketplaces out there will just, I don't know, slink away and go home. I don't know what she expects to happen. But, I mean, we've heard this before, the whole, you know, punish a dissident to set an example. Like, for example, Gandhi, you know, you can't arrest all 20 million of his followers. So, you know, you make a big example of him. That is what they do when they're losing. And that is what gives me hope from this. They're losing and they know it.
It reminds me of those massive lawsuits they would also file against people who would, you know, maybe download a dozen or two songs and make them pay, you know, like several $100 million. I mean, does anyone else remember those?
Oh, yeah.
You know, to set an example or some nonsense.
Here's the thing that people need to realize about this case, too. You can make the argument that maybe this guy wasn't the most moral person ever. And I don't know that for a fact, and neither does anyone else. But playing devil's advocate, you can argue this guy may not be the most moral person out there. Doesn't matter. Does not matter. You know why? Because the fact is, what he did had nothing to do with selling drugs. He simply ran a fucking website. And they even went out and said, oh, he hired these people. No evidence of that. No fucking evidence. And then they say, oh, well, this ain't going to be part of what we convict you on. Then they openly say, this is why we're putting you in jail for life. I can't get over this shit.
This is punishing political dissidents and trying to silence competition because fuck you or the government. That's all it is.
That's exactly what it is. It's fucking politics at its most disgusting form.
All right, shameful.
Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level. If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government censors. It's essential in this day and age. So go to vpn.bogosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world. And they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.bogosity.tv. Okay, more copyright nonsense. I know we cover that a lot. Normally, we stop covering a subject after a while when there becomes nothing new to say, but so far, copyright idiocy has always been bringing up new things to talk about. And this time, it's the Obama administration's insane and clueless arguments about software copyrights, which could have a damaging effect on innovation. And this comes from the Solicitor General, Donald Verrilli, and he used to be, like, this top lawyer for the MPAA, and he's arguing in the case Oracle versus Google, are software APIs covered by copyright? Okay, so software is when you sit down and write the code that's actually going to be compiled and executed on the computer. That's the software. An API, or application programming interface, is instructions for other software makers on how they can interface with that software. So, like, if you want to write a browser extension for Firefox, you get the API for that, and that gives you all the instructions on how to make the extension. The thing is, this guy is so completely clueless, he does not understand the difference between a program and an API. So this actually comes from an earlier court case, and there the judge, William Alsup, actually decided to do the right thing and figure out what he was doing, and he went online and he learned how to code Java to help him better understand the issues.
Nice.
And he wrote this beautiful ruling that seemed to explain it all, and it really seemed tailor-made for the appellate court so that they wouldn't have to redo what he did, and he put all this information in there. And the judges at the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals just threw it out and made this completely ignorant ruling saying that software copyrights apply to APIs as well.
These are the same people a lot of even very technically competent folk want to run the internet.
Yeah.
Think about that for a second.
I could really talk all day about copyright and how fucking ridiculous it is. And it's just patents especially. Patents are especially awful because it's very blatant that they're just designed for the purpose of preventing competition. Just recently, they had a segment on Good Morning America talking about hologram technology for the sake of, like, for example, recreating performances from dead musicians who are so that they could be performing again on stage. That's cool fucking technology. You know, being able to go to an Elvis concert in 2015.
Or see Freddie Mercury.
That's cool technology, and they have the technology to do this now through hologram technology. And they were talking to the people who make this technology, and I guess they have a patent on it. And they were talking about how they're suing all kinds of people for breaking this patent. And they said, we want to stop people from using our technology.
And software patents are even morbid. They're just stupid from the word go.
Yeah, I think you said it's basically trying to claim ownership over math.
Basically, yeah. But copyright law, as long as you have copyrights, you can say that that applies to the computer code because that's expressive as well as instructive, and so they say that falls under copyright. But here's what copyright law actually says, quote, in no case does copyright protection for an original work of authorship extend to any idea, procedure, process, system, method of operation, concept, principle, or discovery, regardless of the form in which it is described, explained, illustrated, or embodied in such work. And so that's what an API is. It's a method of operation. It's not copyrightable. And, I mean, this should just be open and shut, boom, you can't do it. And yet, Verrilli is just really acting like they're the same thing, quote, despite the inherently functional character of all computer code, the Copyright Act makes clear that such code can be copyrightable. Nothing about the declaring code at issue here materially distinguishes it from other computer code, and petitioner has identified no genuine conflict of authority concerning blah blah blah. Although petitioner has raised important concerns about the effect that enforcing respondents' copyright could have on software development, these concerns are better addressed through petitioner's fair use defense, which will be considered on remand. Okay, first of all, no one in this case is saying that computer code isn't copyrightable. They're saying that these APIs are not computer code. There is a difference between the code itself to make the program and the instructions for how to make a completely different program communicate with it.
Stuff like this, whenever it happens, and I see people who really know better, defend this stuff, and I don't just mean in terms of technology, but like I said before, in terms of etiquette and social skills and knowing, you know, that hitting, stealing, etc. is bad. I mean, if it were any other body or group, I guarantee no one would ever accept crap like this. I mean, seriously, their whole argument seems to be, oh, well, yeah, but it's all just words on a screen, so who gives a shit? See, this is probably how Chernobyl happened. Crap like this! Jesus!
The problem with all this is it's so blatant, and it's so unapologetic. And despite this, people still get behind this idea that we need IP in this sense of the word. That we need it to be this ridiculous and over the top.
Well, and the idea that our government is just full of experts and they all know what they're doing and they know better than you, when they don't even know the difference between a program and an API.
I don't know if this is necessarily the best way to go about it, but if I were to say, be in charge of writing the law tomorrow, I would have it so that IP would simply be like a listing giving credit to who made what.
Yeah. So you couldn't pretend to have invented the light bulb if someone else had done it.
But you still have the right to use the technology in a way to suit the market. I think that's a far better way of doing it.
Yeah, so that's something a lot of people tend to do. They tend to confuse and conflate IP with plagiarism.
Yes.
They are not the same thing, folks.
That's the problem. Too many people think, well, without copyright, there would be plagiarism. And IP and copyright are not the solution to plagiarism, because plagiarism still exists.
So just to give you all a practical example, I know this is a bit niche-specific, but what the hell not? Whenever there's blatant plagiarism from artists, like, for example, in the furry fandom, I mean, people tend to go apeshit, you know, blasting the guy and basically just, you know, shaming the person doing it as, you know, an art thief, oh, you didn't give that guy credit. You know, these people, this is how they make their living, and a lot of these folks, like, for example, the picture of my persona, that's, like, the identity I use online, so you could argue that it's, like, an identity thing as well. I mean, yeah, it's like, folks, this, you do know how to solve police for the, why do you think you need government? It's like, good grief, you know better than this, you are better than this.
So, the EFF, one of our favorite organizations, has filed a brief based on the input from lots of different computer experts, which said, quote, "Today, open, uncopyrightable APIs continue to spur the creation and adoption of new technologies. When programmers can freely implement or reverse engineer an API without obtaining a costly license or risking a lawsuit, they can create compatible software that the interface's original creator might never have envisioned or had the resources to develop. Moreover, compatible APIs help enable people to switch platforms and services freely and to find software that meets their needs regardless of what browser or operating system they use. Without the compatibility enabled by the open nature of APIs, consumers could be forced to leave their data and programs behind when they switch to a new service. The freedom to re-implement APIs also helps developers rescue orphan software or data, systems that are no longer supported by their creators. When a company stops supporting a computer platform or service, the ability to freely re-implement APIs protects the communities that rely on that software. Government entities and nonprofits are especially susceptible to the orphan program's problem, as they often cannot afford to upgrade and are left using legacy technologies for years or decades."
First off, amazing quotes. Second off, you want an example of this in action? When I was at the Department of Rehabilitative Services, and bear in mind this was only a couple of months ago, they were still using Windows XP.
A lot of people still are.
I was for a while until my computer finally shit the bed.
Well, I mean, it's a good operating system. After Service Pack 2, it was a good operating system, and a lot of people don't want to switch.
Yeah, and then my computer did shit the bed, and the new computer I got had Vista on it.
Ew. Condolences.
Yeah, but we're pretty much in the 21st century now, and I guess we have to drag the government with us.
Kicking and screaming, as usual.
Yeah.
Hopefully through a bunch of broken glass and rusty nails.
Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to amazon.bogosity.tv or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to amazon.bogosity.tv. So, Travis, you're going to tell us about a guy who fooled the press into thinking that chocolate was healthy?
You mean it isn't?
Well, to be fair, healthy doesn't always imply weight loss. To give you an idea, Minnow on his site has a recipe for like a... I think he called them high-calorie oriental truffles. They're very delicious. I've tried them. And they're actually meant to be a bulking recipe. That is, scrawny guys who want to build muscle and put on weight. But yeah, I mean, despite being highly caloric, they are, and for weight gain, they are very healthy. And that's, first off, right out of the gate, that's something I notice here is, and I shared you those links showing, like, the antioxidants and other related details regarding chocolate. To be fair, it is healthy, but that doesn't mean it's a miracle weight loss supplement right there. So, right out of the gate, we have that equivocation.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything, because even though this guy is admitting that he fooled everybody, for years to come, people are going to still buy into this and still say, oh, it works!
Of course. I think it was Alan Aragon who said that, yeah, the placebo effect is probably the most powerful supplement there is.
People still believe Alan Wakefield after all this time, you know, even though his study that, quote-unquote, vaccines cause autism has been thoroughly debunked, and it's openly been stated that he messed with the data to make his point to make some money.
Well, it was more than that. He deliberately fudged the data.
Yeah.
He supposedly got, like, all this data from different hospitals, and when they went back to the hospital records to double-check, it didn't match.
I swear, Shane, you can't help yourself with these puns. He fudged the data.
Oh, God!
All right, anyway, we're talking about a researcher named Johannes Bohannon, Ph.D. Actually, we're not. His name's John Bohannon. He has a Ph.D., but it's in the molecular biology of bacteria and doesn't have anything to do with humans or nutritions. And he published this in the Institute of Diet and Health, which is just a website somewhere.
Yeah, isn't the government doing such a wonderful job of, you know, regulating and helping with all this health and keeping the junk science out? Yeah, I didn't think so.
But other than that, this was an actual study. They ran an actual clinical trial, subjects randomly assigned to different groups, and they found statistically significant benefits to chocolate for weight loss. The only problem is it was terrible science. He said, quote, "The results are meaningless, and the health claims that the media blasted out to millions of people around the world are utterly unfounded."
Hell, just looking at effect size, I think, okay, 10% faster, so... Okay, so instead of, well, let's say it was for people who lose 10 pounds in 10 weeks, and, you know, another loses... So 10% more, that's only about 11 pounds in that same week. I mean, that's... And I keep thinking to myself, yeah, folks, statistically significant is not always the same as meaningful. So right out of the gate, that's another thing that should be raising an eyebrow.
Well, here's what he says, quote, "Both of the treatment groups lost about 5 pounds over the course of the study, while the control group's average body weight fluctuated up and down around zero. But the people on the low-carb diet plus chocolate, they lost weight 10% faster. Not only was that difference statistically significant, but the chocolate group had better cholesterol readings and higher scores on the well-being survey. Here's a dirty little science secret. If you measure a large number of things about a small number of people, you're almost guaranteed to get a statistically significant result. Our study included 18 different measurements, weight, cholesterol, sodium, blood protein levels, sleep quality, well-being, etc., from 15 people. That study design is a recipe for false positives."
In other words, it was a case of just, you know, seek and ye shall find, wasn't it?
Yeah, he calls it p-hacking, where you just do all of this stuff to make sure you get a significant result. And I'm linking to an XKCD cartoon.
Ooh, I want to see this.
Oh, and I mean, these are just perfect to illustrate this.
Yeah,
so.
I kind of wish I had more experience in statistical analysis like this, so I'd be able to understand it better, but I at least have a conceptual idea of why it's complete horseshit.
Well, what we have here is we have a girl running up to a guy. She says, "Jelly beans cause acne!" And he says, "Scientists, investigate!" But we're playing Minecraft! Fine. And then they say, we found no link between jelly beans and acne, P greater than 0.05. And the guy says, that settles that. But she says, I hear it's only a certain color that causes it. Scientists, but Minecraft! And then they say, we found no link between purple jelly beans and acne, P greater than 0.05. We found no link between brown jelly beans and acne, P greater than 0.05. We found no link between pink jelly beans and acne, P greater than 0.05. Then blue jelly beans, teal, salmon, red, turquoise, magenta, yellow, gray, tan, cyan. And then they say, we found a link between green jelly beans and acne, P less than 0.05. And then no link between mauve and no link for beige, no link for lilac, no link for black, no link for peach, no link for orange. And then at the bottom you have the newspaper, green jelly beans linked to acne, 95% confidence.
Oh my God.
Because they did 20 different colors, and for P less than 0.05, there's a 1 in 20 chance.
That you'll get a false positive. And I think you also said in here, it's to the point where people are actually shying away from that p-value stuff.
Yeah, hopefully they'll go over to a more Bayesian approach, which would be a lot better.
Oh, that'd be friggin' awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, we can hope.
You know, I'll give credit where credit is due. At least, you know, the bogus study aside, which was obviously on purpose, but at least, you know, when he said study says chocolate does this or whatever, he at least gave some bogus facts to convince people that it was backed up. Most of the time you see stuff like this on the news, and they'll just say, a study says this happens, and then nothing more. No, like, explaining the study, where it came from. I mention this all the time, and I still remember it to this day. I was watching the local news, and they were saying, a new study shows that red meat causes death. And that's it. That was it.
I've seen that ripped apart by folks so many times, it isn't even funny. So, and I think I've actually posted on the forum about that. First off, it's only in, the correlation is only found in, like, a weak epistemological and correlational research. And even then, the correlation is weak to non-existent. And I've heard from folks who actually know what the hell they're talking about, like, Menno Henselmans and Lane Norton and others, that when you statistically correct for other fun variables, like adiposity, that is how much body fat they have on them, or whether or not they're fat or not, whether or not they eat the burned or charred portions of it, moral of the story, rare steak is good for you. What else? Whether or not they binge drink a lot, or whether or not they smoke, whether or not they're physically active, stuff like this, when you statistically correct for that stuff, the correlation between, which is already weak to begin with, between stuff like red meat and death and cancer and all that, just completely vanishes.
Because the people who purposefully give up red meat in their diet for health reasons are probably making a lot of other changes as well.
Exactly. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
But what ultimately kills me about this, and I could be way off the mark here, but it seems to me, and I don't know, you guys can tell me if it seems this way to you, but it seems like the more vague a claim is, the more willing people are to believe it.
Well, it's not even that. They didn't even fact check, because after he talks about, you know, how he got it into a journal, which we've talked about before, so I won't go over it again, he talks about what the press did, quote, when reporters contacted me at all, they asked perfunctory questions. Why do you think chocolate accelerates weight loss? Do you have any advice for our readers? Almost no one asked how many subjects we tested, and no one reported that number. Not a single reporter seems to have contacted an outside researcher. None is quoted. Shapes magazine reporting on our study employed the services of a fact checker, but it was just as lackadaisical. All the checker did was run a couple of sentences by me for accuracy and check the spelling of my name. The coverage went so far as to specify the appropriate cocoa content for weight loss inducing chocolate, 81%, and even mentioned two specific brands available in grocery stores and at Amazon.com.
Yeah, I think the real lesson of this story is local news and websites are basically some of the most anti-science things you will ever find, because they will just tell you anything as long as it says study says, even if there's no merit to it whatsoever.
It's funny you should mention that, since I just linked you to some really, really good ones. The right information is out there, but it's more a matter of filtering through all the BS.
Well, and I'm also brought to mind back in the day when James Randi had a couple of young magicians, one of whom went on to be Banachek, But when the scientists were checking out Uri Geller's claims of spoon bending, he sent them in to do it as well. And they just wowed all the scientists, and the scientists were convinced that they could bend spoons with their minds. And he instructed them specifically that if someone asked, how are you doing that? They were to say it's a magic trick. They say, is this real? Is this a trick? They were to own up and say it. If you're asked directly, you own up and admit it's a trick. None of them even asked.
Wow.
Yeah. The problem is too many people are willing to take any claim.
And too many people are willing to listen to the journalists about it, too.
Yeah, and as I said, the more vague it is, the more they're likely to believe it.
It's like I always say and will continue to say, the first step to becoming scientifically literate, stop watching the news. They are completely fucking clueless about science. Seriously, you might as well be trying to learn physics from Wile E. Coyote.
Well, and as much maligned as comments are online, he says, quote, while the reporters just regurgitated our findings, many readers were thoughtful and skeptical. In the online comments, they posed questions the reporters should have asked. Why are calories not counted in any of the individuals? Asked a reader on a bodybuilding forum. The domain for the Institute of Diet and Health website was registered at the beginning of March, and dozens of blogs and news magazines spread this study without knowing who or what stands behind it, said a reader beneath the story in Focus, one of Germany's leading online magazines. So the commenters are doing better than the journalists.
That is so shameful, it almost brings a tear to my eye.
Well, a lot of it, too, is there's probably more to this than just they're stupid, because trust me, they are, but they're stupid like a fox. Let's be frank. If they can get any kind of clickbaity article they can on their website, you know, something that'll drive in the views, they're going to take advantage of it, even if they know it's not real. How many websites do you see post shit like, coconut oil cures cancer?
Oh, Jesus.
No actual science behind it, but they know that if somebody sees that headline, they're going to click to read more. It's a scam, people. It's an outright scam.
Well, I've learned to avoid that kind of stuff. So I would say for this one, that evidence mag, link of mine, why calories count, that pretty much gives some pretty good detailed instructions on how to design a study that doesn't suck on the S. And as far as how to tell between healthy or unhealthy foods, I'd suggest going to the wannabe big one for Diet Nutrition, The Dirt on Clean Eating by Alan Aragon. He is, like, amazing. Both of those two are Army Leg and Alan. They're awesome.
Bogosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy. I've been very satisfied with GoDaddy's services and their wonderful 24/7 customer support for over 10 years now. So I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or other service and get 35% off with the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet hosting. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. Okay, now it's time to raise the minimum for this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week, it goes to a group of labor unions in Los Angeles who lobbied hard for a $15 an hour minimum wage. But as bogus as the minimum wage is, that isn't what got them this week's dishonor. No, it's because as the city council is preparing to raise it, union leaders are asking that their workers be exempt from it.
That's belief in belief if ever it was.
It's not even that. It's just outright fraud.
It's an open and shut case. If you want people who argue the minimum wage to be convinced that the minimum wage can't be a good thing, there you go.
I mean, it's kind of like the people and the politicians who bleed on about, oh, universal healthcare, oh, free healthcare, it's a right, and who then go out of their way to exempt themselves from it, and who won't even go near it.
It's hypocrisy at the cost of so many other people. And that's really what it comes down to.
So here's what Rusty Hicks, the head of the Los Angeles County Federation of Labor and co-chairman of the Raise the Wage Coalition, here's what he said, quote, with a collective bargaining agreement, a business owner and the employees negotiate an agreement that works for them both. This provision gives the parties the option, the freedom, to negotiate that agreement. But I guess he doesn't want non-union workers to have that same freedom.
No. Fuck it, I'll just say it. Unions are a racket. their mom.
I also love the way they worded this. Predictably, this move has led to some charges of hypocrisy from conservatives, as well as pure bafflement amongst others. Right, because, oh, well, yeah, oh, they're just playing politics, you know, oh, they're just... Yeah, no, it's... That is a legit claim of hypocrisy.
Because they point out, quote, in Los Angeles, the Chamber of Commerce is arguing that labor groups want the change so that business owners will simply let workers organize instead of paying the new minimum, which would plump up union roles. Yep, gotta get more union dues coming in.
Yeah, it's just another money-making racket.
Let me just say right off the gate that I never understood the concept of how unions work in this context. Like, the usual thing is, oh, but we want more benefits and pay and stuff. It's like, okay, well, why not just keep the money you would be otherwise paying your union? I honestly don't get that.
Well, I mean, originally, back when they were a mutual aid society, there were all sorts of things they did. If a worker was hurt on the job, for example, you didn't have to go and get a lawyer yourself. Your union would provide one. Now, of course, we have workman's comp. Unions would do things like offer unemployment insurance, which government has taken over now. So, you know, all of the services that unions used to give their workers, the government's now doing, and workers are kind of left scratching their head going, what do I really get from unions nowadays?
Well, which would probably explain why they're being more and more mandatory, and they're forcing you to join them whether you want to or not.
Exactly.
The thing about unions wouldn't bother me so much if they were just, you know, workers getting together and saying, okay, you're not going to treat us like shit. If it was just a voluntary interaction where the workers united and said, okay, you know, this boss is treating us unfairly, let's go to him and stop that. That'd be one thing.
Absolutely. Which is more or less what they started out as.
Exactly. That's what they were originally intended to be. But they turn into this fucking mafia. They're a mafia. If there ever was one, they are it.
Well, I'm throwing brickbats at Slate.com, too, for things like, quote, admitting that $15 wasn't a great fit for every sector of LA's economy probably wouldn't have been politically convenient in the early stage of the lobbying campaign. But now that the new minimum seems close to becoming a reality, the city council has voted in favor of it in principle but needs to approve final legislative language. It can't hurt to give workers and businesses a safety net if they need it. It will be instructive to see whether the idea works better or worse when businesses can opt out by embracing collective bargaining. Maybe there would be fewer job losses. Hold the phone a second! Did they just admit that minimum wage destroys jobs?
It's like you said in that studies on minimum wage video, like why so many of those studies are bogus video you made. Folks, this is just belief in belief.
And they're saying, like, all of a sudden, well, it's a great thing to let people out of this new minimum wage because it might destroy... Well, then why raise the minimum to begin with?
Or even better, why even have a minimum to begin with?
Yeah.
You want to know why they do it? Because it gets rid of competition.
Yep.
That's exactly why.
Yep.
Those are some nice jobs you got there. It'd be a shame if we had to raise the minimum wage.
She loved that.
They want their union workers to be able to get the jobs that everyone else gets priced out of. That's what it is.
Pretty much unequivocally.
This is a controversial statement that I'm about to say, but if you want a real safety net, allow people to undercut.
Yep.
That's a safety net to provide a job. As far as I'm concerned, a living wage is a wage that you're making at all.
Damn straight.
Because guess what? You ain't living if you're making nothing.
So all of that makes these labor unions, and I'm throwing in Slate, too, as this week's biggest bogon emitter. Hackers. Terrorists. The NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Backup sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.pagosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now. And now let's strip search this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
And this week, for the third time, it goes to the TSA. That's the third time, not counting the guy who figured out that he could slip something through their body scanners with a $5 sewing kit and we gave him the silver clue on. Not counting that time.
Yeah.
Who, according to a recent investigation, lets through 95% of dangerous weapons in its searches.
Is there anything that even needs to be said after that? Lets through 95% of bad shit.
Yet they still get to sexually harass passengers and hold up the flights, among many other horrifying things, I'm sure.
So this comes from the Department of Homeland Security Office of the Inspector General, and they did a study where they went to several airports and just tried to get dangerous items through. They were able to get banned items through the screening process in 67 out of 70 tests across the nation.
You know what? It needs to be stated. Folks, these are the people that are grabbing your genitals, looking for weapons, claiming this is what we need to do in order to prevent terrorism. And yet they can't even do it 95% of the time when there's something that they're actually supposed to be looking for going through. Yet they feel the need to either feel you up or rip open your colostomy bag or pour out your dead relative's ashes or all kinds of horrible things that have happened several times. This is considered, I mean, obviously it's not acceptable. They're actually finally saying, okay, something needs to be done. But after all this time, all that's happened is, oh, well, the head is resigning. They're not thinking about completely tearing this down.
He's not even resigning. He's just getting reassigned.
God damn it.
But it's like many an internet meme has said, you know, it shows like a bottle of water. And it says, this could be a dangerous bomb. I'm just going to throw it here in this trash can.
Yeah, that reminds me of the Conan O'Brien actually had a sketch making fun of this TSA story. They have a TSA agent come out and he's like, a little bottle of shampoo. This is above the regulated limit. Throws it away. Then he pulls out four pieces of dynamite and a bomb connected to each other in the shape of a dog. Oh, look at the cute little puppy.
Oh, God.
So DHS Secretary Jay Johnson had this to say, quote, today all air travelers are subject to a robust security system that employs multiple layers of protection, both seen and unseen, including intelligence gathering and analysis, cross-checking passenger manifests against watch lists, screening at checkpoints, random K-9 team screening at airports, reinforced cockpit doors, federal air marshals, armed pilots, and a vigilant public. In combination, these layers provide enhanced security, creating a much stronger and protected transportation system for the traveling public. Name the logical fallacy.
All of them.
I was actually thinking, though, a microcosm fallacy, because it's the reinforced cockpit doors and the vigilant public, and probably to a smaller degree, the air marshals who protect us, and everything else basically contributes nothing.
Yeah, pretty much. And how much more would, quote, the public or whatever, and the air marshals, or hell, just people in general would be able to do if it weren't for the crowding out via government? Maybe just let us find real solutions, like letting people carry guns back onto planes and be armed.
Yeah.
Remember when we were actually allowed to do that? Yeah, what were the terrorist rates back and hijacking rates back then?
Basically zero.
As far as I'm concerned about the TSA, if they're going to go down there and touch my junk, they may as well go behind me and kiss my ass, too.
At least buy me dinner, I mean, please.
Well, listen to what this one DHS spokesperson had to say, quote, the numbers in these reports never look good out of context, but they are a critical element in the continual evolution of our aviation security.
Seriously? Context? What, yet more proof that statism is a religion. Like the, oh, well, that sounds terrible. Yahweh killing babies and splattering them against the rocks, but it's just out of context. Question. What possible context could any of this shit be good or moral or acceptable is what I want to know.
You know what kills me? They had a 95% failure rate, and nobody's talking about ending this shit once and for all and just letting the airports run their own security.
No kidding.
Not a word. Government is the only agency that can fail and fail and fail and fail. And yet despite this, not only will they continue doing what they're doing, but they'll insist, oh, well, the reason why we fail is because we don't have enough money, or because people didn't pray enough to us, there wasn't a virgin sacrifice upon the tallest mountaintop.
I think it was Chris Cantwell who said it most elegantly, that compared to praying, your prayer is probably the real winner of a strategy here by comparison, because at least prayer does nothing. Governments actually harm and kill.
Well, I like what Robert Graham of Arata Security had to point out about this, is like, they're letting all of these through. They're letting, like, I forget what percent of handguns, 50% of bombs, all this sort of stuff. They're letting it through, and nothing's happening. We've got this horrible security, and planes aren't being blown up or hijacked or anything. Maybe there just isn't a danger there at all.
That's a very good point.
It reminds me of one of the other gag items that was in that Conan O'Brien sketch. It was a rifle with two dumbbells on the end of it. Made to look like a bench press.
God.
So all of that makes the TSA this week's...
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this They Must Have Spent Tens of Dollars on This edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv to read the show notes and join the discussion. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or at patreon.bogosity.tv, and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even stick it in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Travis Retriever and Dave Turcotte for joining me.
It's a pleasure.
It was good to be here.
Until next time, here's a quote from David Burge. At $8 billion per year, the TSA is the most expensive theatrical production in history. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Imported License.
Bogosity.
Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.
Oh, I don't think I need to shill.
Go ahead, shill for us.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. Better put on your jacket. It's getting a little chilly in here. It's June, and because of that, we started... And I shilled this on the last hangout, I think, but I'm going to shill it again. We started the Summer of Classics over on SuperplexBros.com, which, if... you're a fan of old school gaming, this is for you, because this is going to be reviews and articles and opinion pieces and all kinds of other stuff talking about old school games. And I've already put up my first review for that. We've already got a couple other reviews for that. We got a nice team of writers who joined up for this, and it's going to be an awesome time. And I'm also doing projects on YouTube to go along with this. For example, I've been doing a Let's Play of Donkey Kong for the Game Boy, which you would think, oh god, Donkey Kong for the Game Boy, isn't that like an arcade game? Why not play the arcade version? No, this is completely different. Completely different, and actually much better game. So check that out, youtube.com/ironfury, superplexbros.com, awesome stuff. Good night.